The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. 20 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, we are here now switching gears very quickly. We are in the thickness of an election year, and we must not negate to talk about these things that continue to affect us, and that has to do with food security and the food import bill, especially with the tariffs being imposed against Trinidad and Tobago at this time. Remember, we talked about the tariffs yesterday, and there's a 12% tariff that we impose against on the U.S. They have now reciprocated or retaliated as such with a 10% tariff on us. All right, and I'm chatting with Richard Singh, rice and corn farmer. Richard, good morning. Welcome to Freedom.
Good morning, baby, and to your listeners.
All right, we all glad to have you, man. I know this man, you know. I know Richie, boy. Richie, good to have you back, man. You all right?
Yes.
Push your mic more. No. You stay where you are and just bring it across. Mm-hmm. Right, there you go. Keep it in. Right, there you go. So, welcome to Freedom. I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the your experience in this industry.
Well, I'm a farmer for 40 years in the rice industry, mm-hmm. and then I branch out to different crops like corn. I do plenty sweet corn and regular corn. I do tomatoes, I do cucumber, I do hot peppers, I do watermelon, pumpkin. Mm. But I'm more into the rice and corn right now.
You're into rice and corn?
Yeah.
I understand the corn, but you see the rice, I never really understand that, no boy? You know, that rice planting and how you the rice when it's ready. I mean, maybe you could explain that very quickly to me.
No, rice is one of the simplest crops to grow. You could broadcast it, just scatter the seed in the rainy season and it will germinate and it will grow. Or you could germinate the seed and prepare the land wet and broadcast it and it will grow. And it's a simple crop, but it needs plenty of water.
Oh. So when you reap it,
it's a mechanized operation also. Like myself and two workers, we just do about 150 acres.
Okay.
Machine do most of the work.
All right. So by the time you get to the end product, it's already rice,
just a bag and carry to the mill to dry and mill.
All right, you have to carry to the mill to dry. Yeah.
Dry it and mill it.
And then, so when you carry it there, it comes back to you?
No, it goes to the supermarket. Flour mills buy most of the rice.
Oh, so once you reach the mill, part of things and you pass it off, that's it there.
You get paid, and that's it.
And you go back to cropping, to planting again.
And the better rice you eat is the brown rice, which means we plant all the rice we plant in Trinidad, really brown rice, you know. The problem with it is when they polish it, they take off the shrink from the rice, the fiber. So you only have remaining white rice. So if you just take off the shell alone, you get the healthier part of rice to eat.
Really?
Yeah, so all the rice is really brown rice.
Wow, you see how easy it is, boy. And we're learning.
And we could produce nearly 70% of the rice locally in this country. It had different ways of doing it.
So we can. What is the wait time?
4 months.
4 months, and yeah. You can have.
You can harvest. You could plant rice in rainfed. You could plant rice in, let me say, a farmer plant a crop of tomatoes. You know, you could go and plant rice in top of that same bed, because the purpose of water and rice is to really keep away the weeds. So once you give it a certain amount of water and control the weeds, you will harvest rice there.
Wow.
So we could grow rice year round, once you have water for it.
Interesting, and the turnaround time is 4 months. So within 4 months, you could harvest.
Yeah, and you could produce the jasmine rice, you could produce the basmati rice in Trinidad. All I could grow here.
But we're importing these things.
Yeah, but you see, there's no plan for agriculture in this country. The only man who had a plan in that time was Mr. Bassan Barat.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if you want to do farming in this country, the government must have a plan. If they want to produce 5 or 6 things so they could measure it, you don't just give incentive and in a year nothing to show for it. You have to measure what you do.
Wow.
So we could produce black eye, we could produce red bean, we could produce corn, we import 200 million pounds of corn for the poultry industry, we could produce all that here.
But then, is it that the turnaround time or the wait time? I mean, I recently learned that even when you're dealing with things like dashing, yams and these things, that you're looking at a 9 month.
Yeah, but the grain crop like rice and corn and thing is basically 4 months. And this thing could store for years. 1 pound of rice could feed at least 5-6 people. Right? 1 pound of dashing or sweet potato could feed about 4 people.
Mm-hmm,
so rice could feed at least double the amount of people and it could store.
Is that
for food security?
Right, so that's what we want to talk about, you know, the type of things that we can get into agriculture that will sustain food security in this country as we are facing some very, very uncertain economic times.
And what happened to, I guess, the people on top? They believe we need a big block of land to produce all this. No. If you have 10,000 farmers around the country producing 10 acres of corn per relationship of grain, we meet our demand. Same thing with rice. You don't need one big block of area, one big block of land to produce this thing. So agriculture has plenty opportunity for the people of Trinidad and Tobago, plenty job creation, and they have plenty, plenty opportunity. We could cut our food import bill by 70%.
Wow. Hello, good morning. Hello?
Morning.
Good morning.
Gentlemen, I want to ask him if the rice we buying by Marcy and all these places, is the rice we produce?
All right. You're just asking if the rice that we buying in some of these local supermarkets, if it's rice that you produce?
No. Flour mill right now, flour mill can answer that. They're now getting back because the rice industry, they basically kind of shut down under Mr. Clarence Rambert. And now with Mr. Kazim Hussein come back and he's trying to revitalize
it. He's trying to?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's coming back.
Yeah.
All right, 625-2257. I'm inviting some calls very quickly and respectfully. Good morning.
Good morning, Davy, and good morning to your guests. Long ago, we used to have the rice when after you reap it, when you take out the shell, and you used to have it brown. Can't we have like that because it's much more healthy and we can have a better life? Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
Speaking to what you said.
Yeah, you see, it's just a simple process. You just take off the shell, is all, and the rice is there. But what happened? People want to see a clean rice, so when they polish it, it's white rice, but it's not healthy. It's really apple.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I hope you gentlemen talk about mechanized farming and how many farmers we need, especially with the importation of corn for animal feed, right? But there's a business adventure more or less. We're looking at a man to see that a lot of business farmers in Trinidad and Tobago really and truly don't see farming in the light of a... Because if we was to do that, the man who importing it, who had 10 truck, who does help to keep a tire shop alive, you understand my point, Davy? Because if I start to grow the corn here, I have no reason to have no set of containers coming on the port. You know? That means there's going to be a reduction in certain things. Certain people don't want that, baby. So you have to implement the thing, how to put it, on a so-called phase basis. Because as we years ago, we've been trying to, Mr. Manning, there was a group of people went down to somewhere, get the river, and plant a ton load of rice.
Yeah, we was in that time.
But one of the problem that the environmentalists have, the same man who come in after you, is that he was mashing up the environment. Enjoy the day.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hello, good morning. All right, 625-2257. And we are just being joined by Mr. Gary Aboud, the CEO of Moda Life. Good morning to you, sir.
I'm not here as CEO of Moda Life. I'm here as Fisherman and Friends of the
Fisherman Sea. And Friends. Right, Fisherman and Friends of the Sea. Yes, I have that on my thing. I have everything with you. Let me just sort you out there quickly.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. We understand the situation with the traffic and, you know, trying to get into Port of Spain. We know. It's a bit tough, but we still appreciate you being here with us and able to join this conversation. So we were chatting. I mean, that is Mr. Richard Singh from the Farmers Association, and you're here representing the fishermen. Graham, sir.
Thank you.
We're talking food and food security. What are your thoughts as it relates to the sustainability of what is taking place, especially with the importation bill and the tariffs being imposed against us at this time? How do you see us sustaining ourselves?
We need a government. We don't have a government.
I want you to be comfortable.
Which is what we're doing. We abandoned. We abandoned people, and we abandoned nutrition, and we abandoned responsibility. And sustainability is just an illusion that nobody gives a damn about. It would be a lot better if your audience actually cared. But you see, caring is something that you could use your lips and blabber, but you really don't care. You're just making noise coming out of your chest. And so the problem I have, and the problem that FFOS have, and the problem that the fishermen have, is that we are abandoned. We are like orphans. And even an orphan, somebody loves and cares for an orphan. You have a special entities in the government that's supposed to look after the homeless, and they're abandoned. But nobody looks after the sea, and nobody is looking after our health. The corporate sector are bringing chemicalized foods that are killing our people, and the same people are bringing chemicalized medicines to remedy the chemicalized foods, and they don't eat it. They don't eat it. They don't eat all the hydrogenated oils and all the fried foods and all the multiple chemicals that they put in beverages. No one eats. They don't eat it. They're smart. They're intelligent. So they feed the ground people, the grassroots, who are unknowing, who want something sweet and entertaining. And what do? We kill ourselves. How many young men have erectile dysfunction? Why? Because of bad diet. Bad diet. And what we're doing, we're becoming more and more an artificial society that want to pretend to be rich, pretend to be handsome, pretend to be everything.
So then how do we pull back on this? How do we get the society to become educated and knowledgeable about these facts? Because
Ask Bob Marley. Bob Marley know everything. They are prophets. We have given the world prophets. Who we don't have to look to the colonials to tell us what we should do. We know it right here. But people are not conscious. People are drunk on stupidity and alcohol that makes them empty-headed. Better they smoke some herb and meditate on serious things about life. Think. If you want to talk about fishery, I made notes, my assistant.
Of course, I would love for you to delve into that a little bit with me and, of course, educate the audience that's listening.
Well, when I say we are orphaned, what I mean to say is that on the sea, the Coast Guard don't have radars. So our men are being raped and murdered on the sea. And the Coast Guard don't have radars. Chiotiang told me, yes, don't speak about what you don't know, but I know we don't have radars. So you spend hundreds of millions of dollars to buy warships, but you can't see beyond your
horizon.
Beyond your horizon, so that we have all kinds of substance. Every type of drug comes in from Latin America, and every day it comes. There are certain places where every single day at 6 o'clock you can go and see the vessels running in and running back out. So it's not just the human cargo, because I'm sympathetic to the suffering of our people. Our people in Venezuela are still our brothers. They're Latino, but they're our brothers. They're human beings. But they're bringing in donkeys, wild meat, goat, sheep, turkey, chicken, eggs, every imaginable thing is coming across. And I don't even have such a big problem with them bringing food, but it should be regulated and licensed. But they're bringing in cocaine, crack cocaine. Look at how many young people get caught as drug addicts. Look at them, and they don't know. They're innocent and vulnerable. They want to be fashionable, but their spirit is weak. So on the sea, we're being raped and murdered, our men. Secondly, Venezuelan boats come here and fish by the thousands, and they're better equipped and better fishers than we are, because their vessels are larger, they have much more capacity, their men are committed, and their men live on the sea. Our men on the sea, we have no training and no formal expose. We have no legislation. The law is 1917. The oldest law on earth is Trinidad and Tobago's law, 1917. So, listen, I can't use bad language on the radio, but where in F's name are our politicians? And it's not one politician. It's a whole band of them, and they're my friends. I love the Minister of Agriculture. If he wants a finger or a hand, I will cut off mine and give it to him because he's a decent human being. But the legislative agenda of governments don't serve our people. They're serving somebody else who have money and who have an interest. And that is just the sad reality. And on the ground, the grassroots people, they're divided and segregated and they're not conscious. They're drinking beer. They're spending money drinking beer and weakening their minds. So they don't think and understand what I'm saying. So I am a victim of myself. People hate me because I'm Syrian, because I have a business, I'm successful. They say all kinds of nonsense that are unrelated to the reality of my message. 1917 is our... The European Union don't even want us. They ban us from exporting our fish because we have improper legislation. And the legislation written 30 years ago, we fought for it. They consulted us repeatedly on it. And they... This government, I'm not against this one or the next one or any of them. I'm against all of them because they don't serve the people.
When you sit down in the meetings with your good friends and you talk about removing a hand and helping them with if they need the help, are these conversations happening on these closed door meetings or these sit downs, these occasional chats you would have? Yeah. And what are your what are the responses to you, Mr. Abood, this morning?
They're trying.
So you
the Attorney General and the Prime Minister control the legislative agenda, what is laid in Parliament. And what is laid does not serve the people. They're serving corporate entities, big oil, big business. Look at we have a problem on the sea with microplastics getting into our food sources. That given the human body does not have a way to discharge unnatural chemicals. So if microplastics get into our food source and get into our bodies, the body can't take it out. Equal cancer, and it's in our sea. So the beverage containers bill was written 30-something years ago. It's a simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pay a small fee so there's a recycling sector that has an incentivized value to kick it off. But they don't want it. The corporate sector don't want it. Blue Waters don't want it. So they set up a fake NGO to say we're collecting plastic and we're buying it. So they put a couple million dollars into a recycling sector. But that's not what the beverage container bill is. Even now, Barbados, St. Vincent, the whole flicking world is banning styrofoam. You can't take hot liquid and food and put it in a styrofoam container and eat it. You're eating styrofoam cancer. Go in the hospitals and look at our data. Why we still have styrofoam being served as food? Because they partner making styrofoam here. So you serve one man to make a couple extra million, and that man go in a church, have a pundit, go to the imam, and he's a holy man. His children get married with pomp and glory, but it's evil. And we as people must bind together and know what is evil. And I have 5 pages of notes. I can't get going because it's so bad.
You know, I want to.
We talk about hydrocarbons in the Gulf of Paria. Uh-huh. We have so much hydrocarbon. There are studies that have been done that show the frequency of eating fish equals a certain frequency of getting cancer. The mm-hmm. professor who oversee the doctoral dissertation, it's a peer-reviewed study. It's not no stupidy man say that. It's an I didn't say it. There's a serious danger of hydrocarbon contamination. We don't even have legislation to command that when you change your oil in your car, where does the oil go? The man throw it in the drain. And it go from the drain into the ravine, from the ravine into the river, and from the river into the sea, and from the sea into your blood.
Now, when you look at these situations that you have made allegations against, especially on the seas, we have the Ministry of National Security would have told us that they do have the borders protected. They are paying attention to these things. I mean, what evidential proof do you have to sustain that these things are not happening? And that Venezuela is now fishing in our waters with better equipment. I personally have not seen it. We have no reports indicating such. I don't know, Mr. Abood. I'm just asking you here as the radio host.
I'll connect you on my phone every single day. Go in Chagaramas. They have 12 licensed vessels are licensed to sell here. They don't fish here. They sell here. And those 12 vessels, every day, they come in and they offload 25,000 pounds of fish. And then they go back out and they collect 25,000 pounds from the 120-odd vessels that are not licensed to be here. If the Coast Guard know me, I know everybody in the Coast Guard, and they respond. We have to keep chasing them. They sleep at night in
all right.
Cyril Bay.
We could go on the North Coast Road.
We can't
go down that rhetoric, because at the end of the day, we don't have any imperial evidence factors against that. That is just from what I'm getting right now, and that is an honest opinion coming
from... You think I would risk my life?
I'm not saying that you're risking your life.
To come out here and chat nonsense that I can't substantiate.
But I am not saying that you're risking your life. I just can't allow this to continue where you're accusing them of sleeping. We had to reel it in, yes, and understand where we're talking about. And let's talk a little bit about the sustainability of the importation bill and food security in our country. Let's talk about the fisheries. Tell me about that industry and how that can sustain our people, preventing us from having to do imports and maybe getting it more local. I'll give you a minute to think about that as I talk to Richard here this morning, as we continue to deal with our local farmers.
For example...
Mm-hmm.
I want to give an idea that what we could bring in forex and create plenty of jobs in the agriculture sector. You use the Beetham landfill as an example. You level down the whole Beetham landfill. You set up a set of greenhouse there. You bring in a university graduate, allocate 10 greenhouse for them, and all the labor is over the road. So you create daycare, kindergarten, and all the Beetham single mother could get job employment right there. That's just one place. And all these food is going to all the hotel and restaurant of the island. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. But the key about it is who's going to implement it.
Hmm. So with these conversations that we are having here, when we sit down with the stakeholders, mm-hmm, like the government,
yeah.
Now, Mr. Abood has suggested that it's not one party, eh? Mm-hmm. It's across the diaspora.
Yeah.
It's everyone that sits there, you know. These conversations, what sort of feedback are you all getting? I mean, we on the ground, we seeing what it is, mm-hmm, but we don't understand. We're not in the rooms with you all. What sort of feedback are you all getting? What are they telling you all?
Well, personally, there's no plan for agriculture in this country. It never had been. One man tried and they cut him off. That was Mr. Bassam Barat, and he had a plan. So if you don't have a plan, you don't know where you're going.
All right. Hello, good morning. I see you want to get in on the program. Good morning. All right. You'll call us back at 625-2257. Gary. Gary, you okay? Hello, good morning.
Morning, Dave. No, Mr. Abood raised some salient points there. Where our culture has changed because we drive along the road and we see garages. And that all that microplastic, all that makes sense, all that Blue Water's issue with ASEA companies trying to buy plastic to recycle. How do you get... Since I've been going to school, Davey, I have a man they call Charlie. Remember Charlie? Charlie away. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing created. By now, we should have... In school, I was taught that more than 30 years ago. Separate plastic from glass, paper. So maybe we're supposed to have a Skytex bill.
You could hear him speaking?
We're supposed to be totally wrong. Mm-hmm. Skytex stuff and Skytex containers. But nobody markets how they be able for people to use. You hot in coffee in a Skytex container. Certain companies don't use that no more. But then again, you have those that are what? They were coated with a particular kind of something on the outside. But then they realize they can't put it on the inside, so they start to put it on the outside to make the paper container more or less waterproof. So we have to understand all these things. Our society, Davy, has not progressed mentally to accept what Mr. Abood... Did you see that talk that gentleman just talked about the landfill? The landfill produces a thing called methane gas. So that idea you had, partner,
can't work. Mr. Our former energy minister who tell me the other day how the IMF repair number 6 and I look all over according to a man there, I can't find where Kevin Ramirez talking about. He had an idea to cover the landfill and collect the butane gas. Excellent idea. We have to get rid of landfill. It's time that garbage trucks separate garbage and we recycle. If we could recycle half our three quarter, we don't buy a subject bottle. And if you watch and see when rain fall, you go by any river when rain fall and watch where it connects to the sea and watch what floats out. We are our own enemy, not the state. We have to advance our society. It has certain places, garbage truck just pass and pick up plastic on Monday, solid waste on Tuesday, paper on Thursday. And
all right, thank you very much.
The society is falling apart, and if you want to pretend that the data needs to be there to show you that the society is falling apart, then you need new glasses.
But then what are we going to do then?
What we need is we need to revolt. We need people to revolt in their mind and get together. We need a government that consults with the grassroots. We need data and an admission of recognition of data. 15 years ago, the World Resources Institute, which is financed by the World Bank and the G7 nations and produces a state of the world report.
Mm-hmm.
15 years ago, they likened shrimp trawling to dynamite fishing in terms of sustainability. It's the most degrading method of destroying a fishery. And yet, the shrimp trawlers, they even destroy the shrimp fishery because of the 26 of them, plenty of them only transporting diesel and selling it illegal.
What, but how you saying that so like that? Listen, eh?
Listen, that was published.
Yeah, but
that was published and they were prosecuted.
All right.
They cut out their hull and they transport and they sell the diesel in the Gulf of Paris. People in court about that.
Yeah, I understand that.
These are things that are very real.
All right.
What
are your recommendations now going forward, especially for the fisher folk? Right, when they're out there in the open waters, what are your recommendations? What do you think government needs to hear now from you, and of course you as well, when it comes to food security in this country that can protect our fishermen and secure agriculture?
You tell me one reason why we don't have any effective national security to protect farmers from predial larceny. This is the era of satellite imagery. You telling me you can't even launch a few drones and put a drone a mile over the sky with a camera imagery translated onto computers to see when there's a violation or movement on a farm? So the farmers, the cost of food would go down by 50% if there was no predial larceny. Farmers would be incentivized to farm. I am a farmer too. They thief everything, and they know when my men are coming to harvest, and they thief it before we arrive. So I'm not interested. Who would be interested in an industry where you don't have governance? I'm just going to give you one example, right? We talk about...
Before you give me that example, listen to this. Hello, good morning.
Davy, no, I'll tell you something. I have a very good memory. 15 years ago, I encountered Mr. Abood on a radio program, and he told me that this country did not need any OPVs. Mr. Manning had a plan. Two OPVs constantly on the sea, never breaking our security perimeter, and when one has to go in service, the third one will come in, and then the other one will go on service. It was a master plan to protect our borders, but Mr. Abu didn't want it then, so he could come now and talk about nobody protecting our borders and all of that. At the end of the day, we are our own worst enemy, because if we do not do things to protect our borders, what do you expect to happen to us, Mr. Abu? I assure you probably deny that you said that. Thank you.
No, I'm not denying it, and I still say we don't need those massive warships. Those are there to protect the oil and gas sector. They are not there to protect fishermen. Our fishermen need fast-equipped pirogues with a central command with radars. We have argued for national security with small vessels that are quick and easy to respond, that are located all over Trinidad and Tobago. And we have never changed that story. That is never. And I still maintain that when Mr. Rowley got into government and went and spent $525 million on our way back from China and bought those ships from the same company, we have nine of them that are derelict vessels that were sold to us by Mr. Manning's son. Everybody making a living off the poor. But who is actually genuinely interested in protecting,
the grassroots? All right. So we have a few minutes again just before we wrap this interview this morning. I have one question I want you to get to with me very quickly. We're in the Lenten season. We have high fish prices. Fish as high as $45 and $48 and $52 a pong during this season. How do you respond to that, Gary? Because that is, I mean, oh my goodness. Outside of the Lenten season, we don't have them kind of high prices. Why only during Lent we facing these kind of astronomical prices? What is the difference with the fishing outside of Lent and during Lent? Is it because of is the Lenten season? What are your people saying? Why is this happening, Gary?
You really want me to answer that?
Gary, why is this happening very quickly? I don't give my dissertation. You tell me real quick.
Is that it's harder and harder to catch fish. So, this is a time when it's rougher and rougher. And Lenten is a high demand time when the species are not here. Now we don't even have bait. Go to Hilo and you will see Hilo Massey stores selling bait fish that is illegal.
But how you could say the bait? Why you call it? Don't call the brand. Tell my local supermarket and we will check it out. Right? But
everybody's selling bait fish. They're catching bait fish and giving it to pigs. There are laws that say you cannot commercially sell bait fish. Since 1917, the colonials.
Well, if that was the case, then these supermarkets that are doing that, they are in contempt of the law, and they can be penalized and charged.
But
because
nobody cares about the law, and nobody
really
cares. Yes, really, they don't care. It's being done openly. There's a limit as to the size of the carry that you can harvest.
So that is your explanation for why the fish price is high during Lent.
If you can't get bait, you cannot fish alavive. Right. You know what alavive is? It's the method of catching the fish where you use a living species, a bait. Mm. And they're catching the bait by the truckload in the North Coast.
But you have evidence of this, Gary? You have seen this?
Call any police station, call the Coast Guard.
You make those calls, but where's... No.
Listen, it's a life and death situation. I'm putting my life on the line.
Well, I don't want you to do that again because you're on freedom.
No, I'm not afraid.
I fear for you. Because we had freedom, but I protect you a little bit. I fear for you,
They have loved people I'm going to meet when I go. I'm not afraid none of them.
When it comes to Richard, and in terms of what you think could be done better for us, our farmers in this country, in your final thoughts this morning, what do you have to tell our nation?
Well, the farmers would like a guarantee market, guarantee price. That will triple our production. You could take up all the incentive and just give us that. And what I would like to see the government do, whatever it's government in power, is all what we could produce here will be important, focus on that and focus on export.
And that will assist.
Yes, that will assist plenty.
Gary, one last question.
What we need is public participation in governance. And when they get into power, they take the vote and they run with it and they do what they want and they leave us out. We should not be locked out. We own the government. They don't own us. And until people get their sense of ownership of who we are as citizens, we're going to continue masturbating with public life and doing nothing to protect or produce or incentivize our people. Now that Donald Trump is on a warpath against black people, he's on a warpath.
Against black people?
Well,
Donald Trump is not on a warpath against black people. Donald Trump is on a warpath against people in general, against what he think would have countries that would have looted and plundered and raped the America's economy. That is based on it. I don't see that as a black people thing. I see that as Canadians are black people. No, I'm not seeing it as that. I'm seeing it as something different.
So now that Donald Trump is on a warpath against the world.
Remember, he's a businessman that is running office, so
you
I understand the but his baseline is the dollar.
Is
the
dollar, right.
That's his baseline.
Do we have a group called CARICOM? What has CARICOM done? Aren't they as ineffective as our government? They get together and eat caviar and bring Mercedes and chauffeur and spend $1 million on a meeting. Have they ever discussed anything of relevance to the grassroots. Now that now that the whole Caribbean is being locked out of the U.S. market, do we incentivize in any way CARICOM trade? Do we even have an inventory of what we produce?
I'm quite certain going forward, those conversations will be had. But I have to pull the plug here and leave it there. We have news coming up at the top. I know we ran a bit late, Gary. I'm quite certain the producers will get you back inside here within a 2 weeks period, but we will talk some more.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.